And welcome back to another episode of TWTM on riotradio.ca. I am your host, Shane O'Neill, and thank you as always for joining me again today. It was, it's clouding over now, but it was a surprisingly beautiful, sunny, cold day here in Durham region. But as I said, it's overcast now, it's dark. I guess the sun's starting to set, and the snow is looking not as fresh and white and clean as it used to. So, you know, that's just how winter goes, I guess. It's back into minus 20 days here in the GTA, and nobody is happy about it, yes. So I will move on. I'm glad you've decided to join me again today, whether you're watching live on riotradio.ca or not live on the podcast. I thank you, and we've got a great show lined up for you today once again. Before we do get started, though, I do just have a couple quick administrative announcements, and these are now becoming a regular appearance on TWTM. I know that I took a week off from the show only 2 weeks ago, and it pains me this to tell you again, but there will be no show next week, February the 24th. It's reading week here at DC and UOIT, so there will be no show. Unfortunately, I will be at home, probably working, trying to make money, and doing other things that I need to do, like reading books, which is what they require as part of our college program here, and I'll be doing that. So unfortunately, there will be no show. Riot Radio will still be broadcasting, so riotradio.ca will still be up and going all week. I'm currently in the process of convincing everyone here to just play my back catalog of shows on repeat for the whole week, so I get more exposure and more people enjoy it because my show's the best. I mean, who are we joking? So remember, just quick recap here. Next week, no show, but I may upload something special for all you podcast listeners out there on iTunes. Now, if you listened to the show last week, it was another great show last week. We talked about some of the big headlines from here at Durham College and UOIT. I debuted a new game called Tinder Stove, which was a smash hit on social media. And we spoke with my friend Neil Fernandez about all things soccer in the new segment, European Sports Roundup. On today's show, I've got some of the biggest headlines from the past week, as always, like big tour announcements and the world of rock and roll, SNL's 40th anniversary special, holidays. It was a holiday here in Ontario, and there were a lot of holidays yesterday. We'll cover some of those. And, of course, Jon Stewart made an announcement that he'll be leaving The Daily Show. I'm also going to be taking a look at the first weekend of the Canadian International Auto Show with a report that I filed from the scene on the weekend. And finally, as always, I'll award my Newsmaker of the Week with a You to Real MVP award. So I'm joined by Mike and Ian in the booth here. Mike, how are you doing today?
Hello, Shane. It's my first TWTM of the semester.
Yeah, the new year of 2015, right?
I must say I'm a little offended by your attire today.
Well, yeah.
I don't know if I can look at you.
Well, I encourage you to avert your eyes. I mean, you don't need to look at me, Mike. I appreciate your gaze. But we've been over this. We don't need to tread water on this one anymore. Just take note that
I have to make light of it anyway.
You have to make light of it. They lost last night, so I mean, I'm not boasting or anything. I just really like this shirt. It's nice.
You know what? It's been a sad year for both of our teams.
Yeah, for the professional sports team, hockey teams, and the hockey hotbed that is Ontario. It's been pretty sad.
It's bad.
But this is the life we chose, Mike. So you know.
Yeah, we did. At least we can say we're not bandwagoners.
We're not.
We've been in it for the long haul.
I've been in it my whole life. I'm sticking with it. You're the same. So that's what I respect about these fan bases. You know,
absolutely.
We're not jumping ship. We're not cheering for winning. Winnipeg now, like some other cities, so
yeah. Although, you know, I don't mind Winnipeg.
Hey, Winnipeg,
they got a good team.
They got a good, great team this year. I picked them to make the playoffs this year. I've got a running pool with a couple of my buddies, and I picked Winnipeg to make the playoffs and also produce a coach in the year, which I believe are both still possible at this point.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Paul Maurice.
Paul Maurice is gonna run away with it.
He's great.
Yeah, but I mean, Winnipeg, they got a tough go of everything, right? I mean, they got their team taken away. It's very cold there. So I'm all for Winnipeg doing well and things. Good for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they're all really behind the Jets too, obviously.
Yeah. Well,
and they're doing well.
Yeah. I mean, there are three things in Winnipeg, right? There's the Jets. There's the Blue Bombers. And then there's Labatt's Blue, which is the three things that keeps them all together, I assume. I don't know.
That's all you really need in life.
That's all you need, yeah.
That's it. That's about it.
Yeah, exactly. But that's great. Again, Mike, we're happy to have you.
Thank you.
We'll carry on. Maybe we'll touch back to you in a few minutes here.
Sure.
So this week's headlines, of course, it's only Tuesday. It was a holiday yesterday, so by default, there was no news from yesterday, but some of the biggest headlines occurred on the weekend. For example, Saturday Night Live hosted their 40th anniversary show on Sunday night. I say Sunday night, but it was really Sunday afternoon to Sunday evening because it went on all day, apparently. I did not watch the whole thing. I couldn't be convinced into sitting down for 3+ hours of it. I will get to it, and I did see most of the good sketches, but some of the highlights were, you know, of course, the star-studded opening monologue, a tribute to musical performances. They had a number of tributes, including, like, to politics, to sports, and as well, they also did a pretty good sketch on, you know, the role that auditions play in some of the histories of some of the great talents that have come out of SNL. There were other great anniversary sketches like Dan Aykroyd bringing Bassomatic out. Bill Murray did a really classic one in the musical performance one. And of course, the talk of the day was, well, I guess there were a couple talks. There was Landshark, which was great. Celebrity Jeopardy, which is something that a lot of people wanted to see and was amazing. And The Californians, which I feel like they may have pulled back. They may have brought out a little bit too early. It still let that one freeze for a little bit, but we'll get into that. Some letdowns of the show. I mean, it wasn't perfect. By no means were they going to be able to produce 3 great hours of television. I mean, it's just going to happen. I thought Sarah Palin being trumped out there and her pathetic attempts at humor were really unnecessary. I didn't need to see that. I get it. The Tina Fey impersonation was great, especially in 2008, but that was 6-7 years ago now, and I'd really like to not see Sarah Palin on my television or computer ever again.
It's really for the better of humanity.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you're right. It's for humanity's greater purpose. Like, how much is Lorne Michaels going to pay to have Sarah Palin run in the 2016 election? I don't care. Like, honestly, Sarah Palin, you didn't write that joke. You did your job fine. Just don't go to these things. You know, just don't go. Just go to Alaska. Go away.
And again, Kanye West was there, too.
And he was great. I mean, he played into it, and it was funny. Like, the Wayne's World, of course, the Wayne's World sketch was amazing, too.
Yeah.
And they did their top 10, which is a throwback to when they used to do the sketch weekly. And I thought the top 10 was great because they were like, Kanye, sit down. Don't come up here. And I thought, oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
It's just astute. It's great. Another thing that let me down, unfortunately, was the Eddie Murphy tribute. So if you don't know, Eddie Murphy was a cast member on SNL in the 80s, in the early 80s, when Lorne Michaels left the show, which I guess was between 1980 and 1985. So he was on the show, I think, for 4 or 5 full seasons. At the time, though, he was 20, I believe, when he first got hired on the show. And he rocketed immediately into being one of the biggest stars in the world. And he's more or less stayed there. Of course, his career has diminished a little bit recently, but that's because he's got so much money. He only needs to make a movie where he plays 8 characters and gets 8 different paychecks. So good for Eddie Murphy for doing that. But I thought that the tribute played out not originally as they had anticipated. So Chris Rock was great. I mean, he did have a pre-written statement, speech about the career of Eddie Murphy, specifically at SNL, but also outside of SNL. And it was really good. I mean, Chris Rock sort of touched on, for people who came to the show maybe within the last 10 years that weren't aware of Eddie Murphy's legacy there, that, you know, really, he saved SNL when Lorne Michaels left the first time and brought all these eponymous characters, hosted the show as a cast member, which is, impressive if you think about how it's so structured now. They're always bringing in guests to promote things. But Eddie Murphy hosted the show a number of times while he was a cast member. He also made 2 big movies while he was a cast member, which usually you don't have enough time to do. But he did Rush Hour and Trading Places as a cast member of SNL, which, I mean, I can't even imagine the work that goes into this. I produce a 1-hour, 45-minute radio show once a week, and I'm burnt out by doing it. So great for Eddie Murphy. Unfortunately, though, Eddie came out to thank Chris Rock and the audience for paying tribute to him. Didn't say a single joke. Not one. Didn't make a joke. Didn't do a sketch or anything.
That's true. He didn't do any jokes.
He didn't do anything. He just thanked Chris Rock. He thanked everyone and said, isn't it great to be here? And I just felt like, I think maybe originally they had wanted Eddie Murphy to do a sketch, or maybe they had asked him to do stand-up or something. But I just feel that Eddie Murphy hasn't really done anything at NBC since the 80s. Like, I don't know. It's well before my time. He must not be one of the Lorne guys. He was, obviously he's not. He was hired by Dick Ebersol, the previous showrunner of SNL. And I guess he's just never really had a close relationship with Lorne Michaels, so.
Yeah, well, what's the deal with Eddie Murphy and SNL? It seemed like he despised the place afterwards.
Afterwards, well.
I remember that the 25th anniversary thing.
Yeah.
That he wasn't there.
He wasn't there at all, yeah.
Yeah, so I wondered if maybe there was some kind of rift.
Well, there definitely is. I mean, he was hired, so SNL has now And it was when it started, it was Lorne Michaels' show, right? He's responsible for getting all the talent, getting all whoever to come in. He left in 1980, and Dick Ebersol, who has since run the Olympics for NBC, and I think possibly is at CBS now, don't quote me on that, he hired Eddie Murphy, and he was the one that launched Eddie Murphy's career. So absolutely, Eddie Murphy would be loyal to Dick Ebersol. And that, I think, explains why for the 25th anniversary, he didn't come back. They wrote a book, I think, for the 30th anniversary. He didn't do anything for that either. He just must not be a Lorne Michaels guy. He had no time for him, doesn't want to do it. So it was sad to see Eddie Murphy not even make one joke or just bring back a joke from one of his stand-up specials in the 80s. I would have loved to see him be funny again, but now he's just...
Do one of the sketches.
Just do a Gumby... Buckwheat, anything. But, you know... Just be funny, Eddie Murphy, but I guess he's just too rich now and it doesn't make a difference to him, so...
I was happy at least he was there.
Yeah, it was great to see him there, but make a joke. I mean, even Jack Nicholson threw a joke out and it was funny, so it's just true. Too bad. It's a wasted opportunity, I think, on both parts.
Keith Richards had a joke, too. He intro'd Paul McCartney.
Yeah, Paul McCartney, and it was good.
He was like...
A band that came from England in the 1960s that changed the world. Enough about the Rolling Stones.
That was it, yeah.
Here's Paul McCartney, yeah.
But that was good.
It is good, because I assume they have some sort of relationship. Maybe they're not best friends. They're probably not. But I assume that when Paul McCartney hangs out with Mick Jagger and Keith Richards, I mean, who would have thought in the 1960s that the Rolling Stones would still be around making music and that the Beatles would have stopped making music in 1975, right? Who would have thought that? Nobody.
Yeah.
Nobody would have had money on that. So
yeah, the fact that the Rolling Stones are still alive
is amazing.
After all the drugs they took.
Yeah, exactly.
That's amazing in itself.
Yeah, it is. And of course, I mean, we obviously the world misses George Harrison and John Lennon.
Absolutely.
And, you know, their deaths were somewhat unexpected. Well, very unexpected. I mean, who thought Keith Richards would still be alive? I mean, really. Anyways, we could talk about this all day, and I gotta move on. So yeah, Eddie Murphy, just make a joke. Chris Rock, you were great though, so no beef there. As well, the musical montage, I really enjoyed it. Full out, I really enjoyed the musical montage. I mean, it was drawn out. It was when they really pushed in a lot of the guest appearances, and that's fine. I just thought that there was one beef I had with it, unfortunately, and I mean this from a place of love. So the musical montage ended with a nod to John Belushi, of course, and the Blues Brothers. Dan Aykroyd, Elwood Blues. He was Jake Blues, my bad. No, he was Elwood, that's right. Jake Blues was John Belushi. Dan Aykroyd came out with Jim Belushi to perform the chorus of Everybody Needs Somebody to Love, which is the title track from the Blues Brothers movie. And have a whole bunch of cast of characters like Jason Sudeikis dance in the background. Most part, it was good. I think it's important, of course, to recognize the Blues Brothers and as it's associated with SNL on the 40th anniversary. I mean, this is an act that arguably put SNL in the zeitgeist in the 1970s before the show even had a chance to fail. The Blues Brothers became huge stars. And correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, please call the show if you want to point something out incorrect about this. But I think that the Blues Brothers, when it was released in theaters in 1980 or 1981, it was the top movie at the box office. It was the top album on Billboard charts. And it was also, and they were both also on the top rated show in the United States. And I think that was the first time anything like that had been accomplished. So to deny the Blues Brothers as having obviously a substantial impact on the first 40 years of SNL isn't true. I just think that, I mean, we all know that John Belushi died 30 years ago. This movie has come out. I mean, we've hashed it out how many times. Dan Aykroyd made another movie with John Goodman that was, I would say, poorly executed, and that was Blues Brothers 2000. And maybe it's just time to put the whole thing to bed, is what I'm saying. John Belushi has been, as I said, he's been gone for a long time. I'm sure it meant a lot to Dan to sing the song with Jim Belushi, John's brother, but they've definitely done that before. It's not something that we really needed. I mean, everyone, I would say, if you're familiar with the show, is familiar with the lasting legacy of that movie, Blues Brothers. It's one of my favorite movies. I still listen to the soundtrack. Not taking away from the movie at all. I'm just saying maybe it would have been better to end with a different musical tribute. But anyways, enough about that. I really enjoyed the tribute to musical performances otherwise. I thought Martin Short was really funny, as always. Maya Rudolph as Beyonce was good. I mean, she brought back this character that she did when she was on the show, and it's pretty bang on about Beyonce. As we talked about, they threw out a Kanye joke in that too, which is funny. I'm going to get laughs. But Steven Martin brought back King Tut for one verse, which is all you need. And the highlight really though was Bill Murray bringing back his lounge singer act as they call him Nick Notion, but the joke with the Lounge Singer act is that he has a new name every time because he's just a hacky lounge singer. And he and Paul Schaefer accompanied him, sung a new theme to Jaws, and it was just really, really funny.
Oh, yeah. And they just kept playing the same clip of Jaws.
Just in the background. Jaws! Sorry for the listeners there, but I died laughing when I saw that. So that was, for me, one of the highlights, because I think Bill Murray, his comedic style, and I think the energy that he brings to his roles pretty much makes him the ideal host for this show, and that he must not do it out of personal preference, because I would say they would want to bring him back every year to do something, because he just brings down the house every time. He's funny. My God, what a funny man. But it was great. So I guess in conclusion here, one other thing that sort of upset me, and this is purely a technical point, and I'm sorry to even bring it up, but with the Celebrity Jeopardy sketch, which I thought was probably the best, the highlight of all the alumni ones, obviously having Norm Macdonald come back as Burt Reynolds and Alec Baldwin do his Tony Bennett impression, which is, I guess, not really relevant, but very funny anyway. I mean, it's great. Also, the other like Jim Carrey came in and did a recently retired Matthew McConaughey bit, which was funny. I just thought the one problem with the sketch was, other than being great, a great way to get alumni into the show, was that they had originally they had Kate McKinnon as Justin Bieber in the middle seat, being like the current joke, which I thought was funny. I love that character. Her impression of the Biebs is very good. But halfway through the sketch, they replaced Kate McKinnon as Bieber with Taron Killam as Christoph Waltz, which is a very good impression. I mean, he does sound Austrian like Christoph Waltz when he does it.
I thought he did a good job.
Nothing against the impression. I just thought for the consistency of the sketch, like, it didn't lead anywhere. Replacing Bieber with Christoph Waltz didn't make any new ending. Like, they just dropped it entirely.
Yeah, it's almost like they're trying to show
get him
as
in.
Many people as possible. Yeah, get as many in.
But Burt Reynolds rolled in, Matthew McConaughey rolled in. They could have just rolled in Christoph Waltz. I just think if you're doing a sketch like that, every element that you bring into it has to take it to a new level or has to do something. And I think Christoph Waltz was just wasted because they didn't do anything with it. And it would have been funny to see Bieber like just jive for Burt Reynolds.
Yeah.
That's my one recommendation. So Lauren, if you're listening, that's my critique. Feel free to send me an email. We can talk about it later. I'm on Skype. Just tweet the show Lauren Michaels and I'm happy to give you my points about how to make a good SNL. What else happened? So on Monday, yesterday, it was a holiday here in Ontario and also some other jurisdictions. So here in Ontario, we call it Family Day. This holiday was originally instituted in 2007 when we called it holiday, but I believe it's been a de facto government holiday for a little while before that. This day, although the third Monday in February, it was adopted in Ontario in 2007 because it is a holiday in other places. To bring Ontario in line with the number of stat holidays we get. It's called different things. In Manitoba, it's called Riel Day after noted, freedom fighter / terrorist Louis Riel. And of course, I'm not throwing any accusations around, but feel free to read the history and understand what that term means. I'm encouraging that discussion. It's called Islander Day in PEI. It's called Nova Scotia Heritage Day, obviously in Nova Scotia. So this holiday has a number of names across Canada. It's Alberta, Ontario, and Saskatchewan currently that recognize it as Family Day. The third Monday in February is also a holiday in much of the United States. We recognize it on our Canadian calendars as President's Day, and it's to commemorate Washington's birthday, but also some other presidents. The holiday was originally February 7th, which is Washington's actual birthday, I believe. It could be a different date. But sometime, I believe, in the mid-20th century, they amalgamated several presidents' birthdays into just President's Day, not to acknowledge one over the other. And as a result, it's called different things in different places. So here are a selection of the differently named holidays in the U.S. that occurred yesterday on Monday. So in some states, it was President's Day, which is presidents plural, meaning multiple presidents with no apostrophe. Then there's President's Day, which is presidents plural, not singular possessive with the apostrophe in the S, meaning the day of the president. Then there's President's Day, which is plural possessive, so multiple presidents having possession of that day. And then there's Washington's birthday, it's called. There's George Washington Day. And these are all the formal names for the holiday in different states. Then there's Washington and Lincoln Day. That's where you get the other president from. There's Washington-Lincoln Day. There's Lincoln's and Washington's birthday, which is very specific. Then there's Washington's and Lincoln's birthday, which is, again, pretty specific. There's George Washington / Thomas Jefferson birthday, which is grammatically incorrect. And it's also a little bit of a deviation from the other states that recognize Lincoln's birthday at the same time as Washington's. Now, I'm not sure why they do that. Oh, I see a note. I made a note in my notes here that this is Alabama's the state that recognizes Thomas Jefferson rather than Abraham Lincoln. So I'll leave that to your own devices, try and determine why that is.
Oh,
we might take guesses. Yeah. Mike, you think you might get it? I'm not sure. I got to look into this a little bit more.
Something to do with the Civil War, maybe?
Maybe. Could have something to do with it.
You know, the Union? And
a few things. There's some other problems. Maybe. I don't know. Anyways, we won't get into that. Then there's George Washington's birthday and Daisy Gatson Bates Day, which is the formal name of the holiday. In Arkansas, for those of you who are unaware, and by all means, nobody in Canada should really be aware of this, Daisy Gatson Bates was a civil rights activist in the South in the 1960s. So she got her own holiday in Arkansas, which is great. And this brings me to my final, the final official name of the third Monday in February as a holiday. In California, it's known as the third Monday in February. That's the formal name of the holiday. So great, California. Really original. I like that a lot. Gets down to the meat and bones of it. All right, so in European sports roundup, we're just going to do a quick one today. We dedicated a lot of time to it last week. Just a quick roundup today. Don't really know what happened in the world of soccer. I don't believe it was the Champions League hasn't started yet. It'll be starting on this upcoming weekend. In rugby, though, the second a second series of tournaments went down for World Rugby HSBC Sevens tournament. Sorry, it's a mouthful of letters, and I try to get it out as clearly as possible. Canada did compete at the Las Vegas Seven events, which is obviously held in Las Vegas, and it was a tough weekend for Canada at the tournament. Canada, and this is just the men's team, played. They played very well on the first day. They beat perennial contenders England in a massive upset, actually, before losing to the host United States in the quarterfinal on day two. That's an equally shocking upset. Of course, Canada never likes to lose to the United States in anything, and rugby is a sport where we're actually closely matched, so tough to lose that one, but congratulations to the United States for making a real push in your home tournament. Continuing, last weekend was the second weekend of the Six Nations Rugby Tournament, which is the de facto European Championship. Round two, it went off without a hitch. England beat Italy 47-17 at home after England surrendered the first try to Italy. Jonathan Sexton returned to the pitch for Ireland as the Irish beat France 18-11 in a battle of kicks out in Dublin. And on Sunday, Wales defeated Scotland in Edinburgh 26-23 in what was an incredibly competitive and exciting game. Despite opening with two losses, the play of Scotland has been drastically improved over previous years, especially amongst their young forward group. Vern Cotter, team coach, has his team playing to their full ability, and Greg Laidlaw has been making his name known as one of the top number nines in all of world rugby. Unfortunately, Scottish lock Richie Gray, who's known to have a large amount of blonde hair, broke his arm or tore some ligaments in there, and he's going to be out for 3 to 4 months, they say. So he's out for the rest of the tournament, which is tough luck for Scotland, but hopefully he's back to full health for the World Cup in the fall. A quick note, this year I signed up for a fantasy rugby team on ESPNscrum.com, and I created my own team. Now, this is a contest. You're free to sign up at any time, and if you like rugby, I encourage you to do so. So my team is called the Flying Fijians, and this week we earned 30 points off of a clinical performance from my number 10, who is, of course, Jonathan Sexton. He notched 13 points for me during the game against France, and as I hedged my bet by starting four other players from France. My center pairing of Fofana and Bastereau put together 6 points combined, so that got me into the 30-point range. I was pretty happy about that. I have had to make one change to my team for next week. I originally had Mike Brown from England as one of my wingers, but he was knocked unconscious in the game against Italy on Saturday, and I'm pretty sure he's going to be out for the rest of the tournament. They do a concussion protocol in the RBS Six Nations and in World Rugby. Apparently, he passed the concussion protocol, but I imagine they're going to force him to sit out. He was clearly unconscious on the field. I've decided to replace him for my next round of games with Yvan Huget of France. He scores a lot. He also takes some kicks every now and then, so he'll probably put some points on the board for me. And my team is becoming pretty French. We've got 4 of 15 players from the France side, so I'll remember to try and balance that out next week. Finally, Jon Stewart announced that he would be leaving The Daily Show at the end of this year. Stewart has hosted the show for 16 years, I guess since 1999. He's covered 3 presidents and 4 presidential elections. Famously, he's launched the careers of Stephen Colbert, Steve Carell, Rob Riggle, Ed Helms, Rob Corddry, John Oliver, Al Madrigal, Christian Shaw, Olivia Munn, and of course, the two mainstays on the show, Samantha Bee and Jason Jones, who are both Canadian, was important to note. But these are all people that have become fairly well known within the entertainment community, especially Steve Colbert and Steve Carell. And they all admit to owing their careers to Jon Stewart and the risks that he took to do a show like that, which at the time, I mean, he adopted the show originally from Craig Kilborn, but it wasn't as popular. It wasn't nearly as popular. It wasn't a tenth as popular as it is now. And it was a little bit of a challenge for an outsider, like a non-network television channel, like the Comedy Network, to produce a political satire show like that. So good for them. Great for Jon Stewart. Famously, he held a rally to restore sanity in 2010 on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. It was attended by over 100,000 people. He won 10 straight Emmys for Outstanding Variety Music or Comedy Series and two best-selling books, The Earth, the Book, and America, the Book. He also won a Grammy for the audio version of America, the Book for Best Comedy Album in 2005. Oh, finally, one last note, actually. Legendary Aussie rockers AC/DC confirmed that they'll be going on another world tour this coming summer with stops in Ontario, like Ottawa and Toronto, as well as across the country. It seems that bands seem to be touring later and later into their careers. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I love Akadaka. I went to see them on one of their previous tours, the Black Ice Tour in 2009, and I loved it. I had a great time. Angus Young could definitely still shred, and Brian Johnson's voice is what it is. He gets it out there. It's fine. But man, the rest of the band is getting very old. I mean, Angus Young's brother Malcolm has had health issues. We know that, and that's related to age. The drummer whose name escapes me, but he's a drummer, so it's not that important. I mean, they're both getting really old, and there's no – it's all these concerts, all the choreography is technical. I mean, it's all fires and fireworks and cannons going off. There's no movement really from the band at all. So it's just them showing their age. But, I mean, I can see the incentive of traveling around the world and playing sold-out arenas for 100 straight nights. It's it would be tough to want to give up the dream, but it definitely takes its toll on anyone. So, for a closer look at what life is like on the road with some of the legends of rock and roll, I spoke with former roadie Mitch Green over the phone on Sunday to talk about some of his classic memories from touring with some of the world's biggest bands. All right. Now, with news that rock legends AC/DC, or Akadaka as they're known in Australia, are going back on tour again this summer, I've decided to get a few words with a friend of mine who is actually a former roadie for many of these classic 60s and 70s rock bands. I'm on the line with Mitch Green. Mitch, how are you doing today?
Oh, real good, yeah. Hey, Shane. How's it going? Big fan of the radio show.
Oh, thanks a lot, Mitch. I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. Just sitting at home playing backgammon with the cat there.
Oh, wow, that sounds like a great day there, Mitch. Now, Mitch, as we were talking about there, we've received word that AC/DC is going back out on tour. Do you have any tour stories from AC/DC, your time on the road with them?
Oh yeah, sure. Well, this one's a bit of a doozy, you know. Okay, so it's the 70s there, and we were touring the greater part of I guess what is now called Scotland, and anyways. You know, Angus, bit of a prankster. we're backstage there, and you know, I like to have myself a nice cup of Earl Grey tea. Well, old Angus, he switched out my Earl Grey for a bit of green tea. Spat it right out on the ground. He's laughing, having a howl. Boy, you should have been there. It was a riot.
Oh, okay. So Angus pulled the old tea trick there, the old switch tea, eh?
He's always pulling pranks like that. One time he told me I had a phone call. And can you guess what happened next?
No, I can't.
I didn't have a phone call. He made me walk all the way in the other room there. Oh, boy, we had a chuckle.
Okay, well, thanks for that, Mitch. Maybe you've got some better stories there. So, Mitch, you've worked with some of the greatest acts of all time, The Doors, AC/DC, The Rolling Stones, Lynyrd Skynyrd. You must have some amazing and wild stories that I'm sure our listeners would love to hear.
Okay, well, how about a Jim Morrison story?
That sounds great.
Okay, so, all right, it's the 60s. The Doors just came off a pretty good sold-out tour there, and a big shot Hollywood producer at the time had us all at his house in the hills. You know, drinks were had. There was pretty ladies all around. You know, and old Jim had his fill, as he usually did. He got pretty drunk, and he had to leave the party. So, you know, he went to leave, and then I saw him trying to get in his car, and I said, oh, no, no, none of that there, Jimmy boy. No, no, no. So I took his keys there. I was fine. One and done, I always say. I was sober. So I gave him a ride home.
And what happened after that? Is that it?
Oh, well, then I went home and I hit the hay. Had myself a sandwich beforehand and had a good night's rest. What a time to be alive, eh? What a wild man.
That's pretty crazy that you were a designated driver for Jim Morrison. That's amazing, Mitch.
Yeah. What was he thinking trying to drive in that state?
I can't imagine what he was thinking, Mitch. Now, I think our listeners at home may want a story with a little bit more substance, you know, something crazy and destructive. Do you have anything like that?
Okay, well, you better strap in because this one's a doozy, my friend. Okay, so it's the 70s. Deep Purple just blew the roof off a stadium in Manchester. You know, we're backstage. There's food and booze everywhere. Pretty girls. And get this, Shane, are you listening?
Yeah, what is it?
Some guys were doing pot cigarettes, if you can believe that.
I don't know what to say, Mitch.
So, I'm there, and I hear a bit of a commotion coming from Richie Blackmore, you know. And I go over to see what the haps was there. And he's freaking out, because he found out his mom's coming to visit, and she'll be there any minute.
Wait, so Richie Blackmore's mother was coming home? That was it?
Coming to visit him at the stadium. And he was yelling because he had a stain, a mustard stain on his pants, and he didn't want to look sloppy in front of his mom.
Oh, no. What kind of pants were they? Were they his tight leather rock pants?
No, no, they were khakis. But this is the crazy part. Shane, are you ready?
I'm ready, Mitch. What is it?
I find out me and Richie Blackmore are the same waist size, so we swap pants, and I spend the rest of the night in mustard-covered pants. Wow, what a time.
That's it? I mean, Mitch, you got to have a story that's better than that.
Oh, okay, I didn't want to have to pull out this one, Chainer, but I hope you brought a straitjacket, because it's about to get insane in here.
I doubt it for some reason.
Okay, so I was on tour with Paul McCartney's Wings. He took us all out, the whole crew. He took us out for dinner there.
Yeah.
We went to some restaurant in Boston. So I says to Paul, I says, hey, could you pass the ketchup? You know, because call me crazy, but I like to put a bit of ketchup on my mashed taters, eh? So he passes me the bottle. I spreads it on the spud, take a bite. Wouldn't you know what? My mouth starts burning. It turns out Paul McCartney swapped the ketchup for hot sauce. Boy, what a trickster that one too, eh? We had quite the howl, I tell you. Oh, boy.
Wow, Mitch. I really don't know what to say about that one. I mean, that story is pretty great. Paul McCartney switching your ketchup with hot sauce. I mean, that's amazing. He's a legend.
I know, yeah. Most of my stories are condiment-based.
Hey, well, all of our best stories are condiment-based, Mitch. Anyways, that was a great story. Thank you for taking us down a trip down rock and roll legend memory. Mitch, I'd like to thank you for joining TWTM today, and we'll talk.
No problem, Shane. You're doing great stuff over there.
Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Bye-bye now.
All right, and I'd like to thank Mitch Green for joining me on the phone this weekend. Mitch is a somewhat retired roadie, and we might have him back on the show at some point in the future. So what do you think? Do you have any thoughts on the headlines from this week? Have you ever been on tour with a world-famous rock band? What's your favorite SNL sketch of all time? We've been having a really good discussion about this between Ian, Mike, and myself during our little clip there. Let us know. Get involved in the conversation. I mean, you can connect with TWTM online on Facebook at fb.co/twtm.durham. You can find us on Twitter at @twtmdurham using the hashtag TWTM and get featured. You might get a shout out on the next show. You might inspire me to pursue a lead. And as well, I'm still taking information on any spies, North Korean spies, as well as Lorne Michaels. Please tweet the show and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. So we're going to take a quick music break here, but coming up, I've got my report from the first week of the Canadian International Auto Show in downtown Toronto. But before that, here is Brian Adams with Run to You on riotradio.ca. And welcome back. You're watching TWTM on riotradio.ca. That was Run to You by Ottawa's own Brian Adams. So this week, the Canadian International Auto Show is taking place over at the Metro Toronto Convention Center in downtown Toronto. It's the largest car and trade show in Canada and features displays from over 20 different manufacturers. While most press coverage and spectator attention is going to, you know, the new line of Maseratis, the Lamborghini Huracan, or the Pagani Huayra at the exotic section, I needed to get the information my listeners need to know. I'm a young person with very restricted income. Many young people are in this modern, and in a modern urban environment, many young people are looking for taking different things into consideration when they're buying a new car. A lot of things they want to talk about is, what's the price? Am I getting good fuel economy? And is it versatile? So to learn more about the cars that would give the most bang for their buck, I went to the auto show's media day on Thursday last week to speak with the quote-unquote experts themselves. I spoke with someone by the name of Shane Peaver, who is from Oshawa. He's a brand rep for Chevrolet here in Oshawa. And I spoke to him about the hybrid electric Chevrolet Volt and the diesel Chevrolet Cruze. And we will listen to that just right now.
Why don't we talk about the Volt and the Bolt EV?
Absolutely,
I want to know
yeah.
some more about this.
Sure. So these are both electric vehicles. The Volt is an extended range electric vehicle.
Yep.
Has a backup gasoline engine, 1.5 liter engine that will kick in once the electricity charge is depleted on the vehicle. So
yep.
The Volt, with a V, has an electric range of about 80 kilometers and then a gasoline engine that will provide you backup in the event that you want to go further than that. You could take this car anywhere, run it solely on gasoline if you're out of charge, but you know, all 80% of people's miles on the Volt or kilometers on the Volt come from electricity only. So, yeah. So this one's all new for 2016, and it was unveiled in Detroit. This is the first appearance for it in Canada, and it's significantly lighter. Significantly more advanced battery pack and significantly more range, and also a lot of technology in the vehicle that, you know, consumers told us about that they wanted you know, from the previous vehicles to enhance their driving experience.
Cool. So now just explain to me for the Volt. We'll get to the Volt in a second here.
Sure.
But the Volt, so the gas engine and the electric engine,
yes.
Is it a gas generator for the electric motor, or are they two separate engines?
They're separate, actually, but they do work together.
They do work in harmony, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, and it's really a seamless transition. So basically, when you charge the vehicle up, you get a full charge in a vehicle, which will allow you to go 80 kilometers.
Yep.
And during those 80 kilometers, under most normal driving conditions, except for extremely cold weather, you won't be using any of the gasoline engine at all.
Right.
So at that point in time, you're basically driving an electric vehicle. And the beautiful part about the Volt is the range anxiety goes away, because a lot of electric vehicles, once you're done your charge and you run out of range, that's it. With the Volt, once that range is depleted, the gasoline engine will kick in and then continue to allow you to travel on regular gasoline. So,
and will the gasoline engine recharge the electric engine?
There's actually a lot of features on the vehicle that you can use that will help recharge the engine.
Okay.
One of those is regen on demand. It actually comes from the braking system.
Right. Okay.
So even when you're driving in gasoline only power and you come to a stop, you can use regenerative braking, which basically transfers the power generated from the braking system back into the electric battery to recharge it as you're driving.
Cool,
so instead of using the brakes, you use a paddle on the steering wheel to pull back on that will gradually slow the vehicle as though you were braking lightly.
Oh, interesting.
And that recaptures that energy and basically allows the battery to store it so that you can increase your range and store on the electricity.
So. Wow, okay. And so when you use the paddle, then the stopping distance is like the same as you would with the
brake? It's like light braking.
It's light braking?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So a lot of folks will use it if they're in stop-and-go traffic, and they have a good amount of distance in front of
them. On the Gardner or something.
Yeah, exactly. And then folks that travel in the mountains and things, if you're speeding up as you're going down a hill, you know, it certainly helps you regain your you know, keep your speed or hold your speed, but use some power to regenerate your
battery. So this is a crude comparison, but it would be like one of those old electric lights on a bicycle when you plug it, you push it against your tire, so it creates friction, and then that friction creates
it basically transfers the kinetic energy back into the battery.
Very cool.
So, yeah.
Okay. Just some stats quickly on the electric and gasoline engines and the Volts.
Sure.
Off the top of your head.
You know what? I'll get those to you
well,
because you know, there's a few things there that we want to make sure.
Cool.
That we send you. So
we'll move on then. Tell me about the Bolt.
Sure. So the Bolt is is a completely electric vehicle. So unlike the Volt, the Bolt actually has no gasoline engine. It's purely electric, and it is a concept. But as you know today, that production was announced for the Bolt production vehicle in the U.S. basically.
Right, and that's for next year, right?
The timing hasn't been been released, but certainly the production has been confirmed, and that it will be in the U.S. So this is a concept, but essentially the key messages here are that it will have 300 kilometers of EV only range, which is fantastic. So significant advancement in terms of what's available in the marketplace today for electric only vehicles.
Yeah.
And you know, the price point obviously is going to be around the $30,000 range. So gives consumers a pretty good viable alternative to, you know, vehicles where they don't need to travel you know, 500, 600, 700 long distances.
Yeah, and I mean, that's not comparable to some of the other sedans that are on offer right now, right?
So, absolutely.
What is the, I mean, obviously it's still a concept car, so a lot of the things aren't determined yet, but what would you say on average is the recharging time, refueling time for?
Well, you know, that hasn't actually been determined on the Bolt per se, but the Volt it's 4.5 hours.
4.5 hours.
So,
okay.
And that's using, you know, a 240 charger, which a lot of people end up having installed in their homes after purchasing a Volt.
Right.
But, you know, between 4 and 8 hours is certainly a reasonable amount of time for somebody, depending on the charge.
So, yeah, cool. Awesome.
Yeah. We have the Cruise diesel here, which was all new last year. So,
right, okay.
This is a 2-liter turbo diesel.
Oh, it is a turbo diesel.
Yeah, it's actually the most fuel-efficient non-hybrid vehicle in Canada.
Yeah.
So, it actually beats the Volkswagen Jetta TDI in terms of highway fuel efficiency, and it really is best in class in every way. So we've actually had a really good success story with that.
Cool.
Sold over 1,000 units last year.
In Canada?
In Canada, up from 600 in 2013. So really, we're seeing really strong demand for the diesel in the Cruise. So,
and for posterity, do you assemble that at Ingersoll or parts of it, or is this just
the Cruise is assembled in the U.S.
Okay.
I believe it's Lordstown. I'll have to confirm that for you, but...
Okay.
The diesel engine is produced in Germany, and it's an Opel engine, and then it's assembled in the plant in the U.S.
Okay,
so,
yeah. Cool. And so is the diesel available on any other model, or is it just the Cruise?
For now, just the Cruise, but we have announced that it's coming on the Chevrolet Colorado midsize pickup truck as well.
Okay, and that was Shane Peaver from Chevrolet. Thank you for giving me the breakdown and sharing the information about those cars with us. So another economical car built with the urban commuter in mind was also on display at the auto show. The PLP 50, which is the world's smallest production car ever made, was also drawing crowds of onlookers over the weekend. The P50 is a car originally built on the Isle of Man, which is of course famous for its narrow roads. And this particular car is owned by the Ripley's Believe It or Not attraction or museum in Niagara Falls, and it's one of several in their fleet. So at Media Day, I had the opportunity to take the PLP 50 for a test drive inside the Metro Toronto Convention Center, and here is my report.
I'm here driving the world's smallest assembly line production vehicle. This is a car called the PLP 50. It's produced at a factory in England. It was specifically designed in the 1960s to drive on the Isle of Man, which is famous for its very small streets and motorcycle festivals. This bad boy, in its original condition, is a totally street legal car. It has mirrors, it has brakes, it has lights, and it comes in both an electric and a gas version. The car I'm driving right now is owned by Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum in Niagara Falls. It has been converted to a 2.5 kilowatt electric engine that pushes a whopping 4 brake horsepower, is what I'm told. This thing, at its fullest capacity, will do a top speed of, wait for it, 42 kilometers an hour. That's 30 miles an hour at the best of times. This is the same engine you'll get in a moped or a Vespa. Although the production version of the POP 50, when it was produced in the 60s, as well as the new line this year, it is street legal. This current model that I'm driving lacks side mirrors. It's just a test car, and it also has no brake because there's no braking here. So I'm currently flat out. I'm doing about half a kilometer an hour. It's driving in a circle. And this is about as much as you're going to get out of this thing. It's very hot. It's sticky. I'm cramped. I'm uncomfortable. It's basically the same feeling I have when I'm stuck in traffic on the Gardiner. This vehicle is 40 inches wide, 54 inches long, which means that it's about one third or one quarter the size of a smart car. You can drive this comfortably inside. I'm currently in the north building of the Metro Toronto Convention Center. And you can drive it well on sidewalks because people won't be able to spit at you and hurt you with body checks. I would not recommend driving this in traffic. It would be terrifying. Again, I'm only doing about 800 meters an hour or something. But like I said, it's a lot of fun. So thanks a lot. This is Shane O'Neill signing off.
Well, thank you, Shane. That was a great report there. So overall, I'd rate the drivability of the Peel P50 as very, very low. With improved fuel consumption and the plummeting price of gas, many of the dealers are pushing their crossover SUV models and their larger four-door cars. I'd recommend, personally, going for a smaller car, something that's going to save you gas in the city, be easy on gas, but still have enough space for you to take your groceries home. Unfortunately, because of that, the Peel P50 is out. That's no good. I don't recommend buying it, although it was a funny novelty, and perhaps it's really good on the Isle of Man. Not so great here in Canada. The engine was also getting a little tiring to listen to. I'd recommend actually going for a smaller car. And actually, I prefer diesel engines over the hybrids that they're selling now. Hybrids are inherently more expensive. You're limited in terms of electric range. And they're also very, very heavy, which, you know, increases your fuel consumption when you're driving with the gas engine. Because of this, and it's got nothing to do with the interview I was able to snag from Chevrolet, but I would actually recommend the Chevrolet Cruze turbo diesel. Diesel engines are far easier on fuel. They're proven to last longer. And with a turbo diesel engine, you will have the same jump out of the 2-liter in the Chevy Cruze as you would from a regular 3-plus-liter petroleum engine. In fact, the Cruze diesel generates more horsepower, that's 151 horses, and goes from 0 to 100 in 8.6 seconds. Both of those are better than the Jetta TDI, turbo diesel injection, which is the industry leader in North America. And at coming in at around $25,000, the Cruze turbo diesel is far cheaper than the Jetta, and it's my pick for your startup car of the year. So if you're in the market to buy your first car and you don't want to get a used car, I would say go for this one. So, of course, I'd like to thank the kind people of the Auto Show and Ripley's for letting me mess around with their stuff at the convention center and for not kicking me out of the media day. The Auto Show, if you're interested, runs throughout this week and ends on Sunday. If you're in the market for a new car, go there to see it and check it out. So we're going to take one final music break here, but we have got more show coming up after The Beatles with All My Loving on riotradio.ca. And welcome back. You're watching TWTM on riotradio.ca. That was All My Lovin' from, of course, The Beatles. And that song is in honor of them appearing on The Ed Sullivan Show 51 years ago last week. So, of course, finally on the show, we award our Real MVP Award for the week. Now, talk about it earlier, and I don't have much time left, but this week's winner is, of course, Jon Stewart. Jon Stewart and The Daily Show was a big influence on me growing up. It's been my favorite show for more than 10 years now. I watched it throughout high school, which was a number of years ago. And Stewart, of course, is the linchpin of that program. He was hosting it every night, daily, as the only host. He had a number of correspondents, but the comedy really hinged on what his tastes were. The show that you're listening to right now would probably not exist had it not been for The Daily Show and the humor that I got out of it. And the quality of stars, of course, churned out by the show is a testament to the legacy and commitment of Stewart. So congratulations, Jon Stewart, you're the real MVP this week. And that's it. So thanks for tuning in today and catching up with TWTM. I am Shane O'Neill, and I will be back again 2 Tuesdays from now. Again, we will have no show next week. Thanks to Ian and Mike for joining me in the booth today and for working the ones and twos. Remember, of course, to connect with us with your questions, comments, ideas, news, and tips. If you want a shout out, send us some love on Twitter at TWTM Durham, hashtag get featured, or on Facebook. You can find TWTM at fb.co/twtm.durham. Of course, you can also subscribe to the podcast version of the show and listen to it anytime you like on the iTunes Store. And thank you so much for listening once again. I appreciate everything that you do for the show. So to take us into the rest of the week on Riot Radio, here's I Heard It Through the Grapevine by Marvin Gaye. Have a great week, everybody.